And when the man talked, it did something to me. He's one of those people who went a little bit farther than I had to go. And I'm real grateful for that. He's also one of those people that I can look at and see recovery. Not abstinence, recovery. If you haven't heard Danny Joe talk, you're in for a treat. Man's got a good story. Come on up here, bud.
Really blows me away. Hi, everybody. I'm a drug addict. My name's Danny.
Hi, Danny.
I'm real nervous. I've been told by someone who knows I shouldn't be. I think that's bullshit. Sometimes when I'm in your presence, I'm nervous. You know, it's real important for me to share with you what it was like, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. Because everything I am today and everything I have today is a direct result of this program. I take no credit for that, you know. I feel real fortunate that I live long enough to find you, you know. I tried hard not to, you know. I don't know whether it was consciously or unconsciously, but I should be dead, you know, and I'm not. You know, I love to have fun in sobriety, you know. I thought when I got sober I would have to become a saint or Christ-like, you know. And I'm glad that I didn't have to. I'm glad that I was able to continue to hang out with the people that I always hung out with before, you know. I've always hung out with drug addicts and alcoholics all my life, you know. I guess that's because that's who I am. And today I still hang out with drug addicts and alcoholics, you know. And there's a few earth people that I love, you know. And the only reason I'm able to love them is because I try to understand them, you know. I don't expect them to understand me. I've got you to understand me. I don't need anyone else to understand me. I can go anywhere in the world and find a group of people who understand me. So my life's easier when I'm not out there trying to make other people understand me. You know, because no one knows what it's like, I think, to be a drug addict except a drug addict. And I don't believe that deep in their heart that it can't make as much difference to anyone else if we stay straight, you know, only each other. You know, because we know what it's like to go out there and use, you know. I know what it's like to go out there and use after I've been introduced to this program. It's a bitch, you know. It's a bitch to go out there and sit there and stick that needle in your arm and it don't go away anymore, you know. Because I came around and I saw the miracle, you know. I saw you people, you know. And you were having more fun without sticking the needle in your arm than I was when I was. And I used to sit and try to figure that out. Well, you know, how's that work? You know, why are they grinning? And I feel like shit, man. I've spent all day, you know. I would go to any lengths, you know. I used to break needles off in my arm, and I would wonder where they went, you know. And I thought, well, I won't use them B&D syringes anymore, man. It's, you know, I'll get stainless steel because, you know, you buy that cheap shit and it, you know, and you, hell, after you wash it out for 3 or 4 months, you know, the needles just kind of fall off and you go, oh God, you know, where'd it go? And then you lay awake and you try to figure it out in your head where it's going, you know, is it just floating around somewhere and, you know, and someday it's just going to puncture in your heart and then you're just going to die, you know, and, you know, since I've came in this program, I haven't had to experience those thoughts at night, you know. And for that, I'm grateful, you know. I did it 2 days in a row. See, everything I've ever done in my life, especially when I'm using, every mistake I've made it twice, at least. My police record is proof of that. I would go out and do something and screw it up and come back and figure it out with my head and then go do it again, thinking that it was going to be okay, you know. And I'd screw it up again, you know. Because all my life from the time that I was able to, I've tried my very best to operate with a drug-affected mind, you know, because I couldn't stand the voices, you know, and I couldn't stand the people, you know, and I couldn't stand me, and I had to get away, you know, and the only way I could do it was put something in my body, you know. And I'd like to tell you that since I came in this program, everything's been wonderful, you know. And that's bullshit. Hasn't been wonderful. But it's been good. You know, every night when I go to bed and I try to do a 10-step, if I don't forget or if I'm not too lazy or if I just don't want to mess with it, you know, and I realize that I've been sober and straight another 24 hours, no matter what's happened throughout that day, I've had a good day. I don't care what it was, you know, because I lived all my life in institutions. You know, from the time I was 14 on, you know. When I was about 14, they started talking to me for my own good. And I found out when they do that, you better pack a suitcase. Cause you're going somewhere. You know. This is for your own good, okay. Never did me any good. It did them some good. You know? They got rid of me for however long I was gone. They knew if they got rid of me, I'd stay as long as I could because, you know, I was going to do it my way wherever I was at, you know. They tried to modify my behavior when I was a kid. You know, that's where you do something and they do something to you and then you're not supposed to do it next time because you remember what they did to you. You know, and I would do something and they would hit me in the head with a 5-cell flashlight. And I learned how to be real sneaky. I never once considered not doing it. Because if it was something I wanted to do, then I would do it. And it made no difference what the consequences were, you know. And back when I was using and drinking, I became super junkie, you know. I get loaded and become invisible. No one could see me. You know, I could do anything, you know. Just anything, you know. I got caught a lot, though. I was the guy that, when people said, oh, let's don't do that, I'd say, I'll do it. See, because I so desperately wanted to be accepted by someone. When I was a kid, I picked out some people that I wanted to be like because I didn't like who I was. You know, I was a little short, fat kid with a bow tie, and I used to have hair. And I swear to God, I did. Because I've seen pictures. I don't remember it, but I don't think I've ever told you how I lost my hair. When I was in reform school, it was a long time ago, and that's back when everybody wore their hair greased down. That's when Elvis Presley first came out, and everybody wanted to be Elvis Presley, you know. But in this reform school, they wouldn't let you have anything to put on your hair because it stained the pillows and stuff. But we figured out that if we took some Brill cream, and at the plumbing shop, they had this plumber's grease that you put on the pipes before you screw them together. And we mixed Brill cream with this red plumber's grease and we put it on our hair. And the guy that ran the plumbing shop told me, he said, don't put that shit on your hair because you'll lose your hair. It'll make your hair fall out. I said, not me. But it did. I'm the kind of guy that'll absolutely destroy himself to prove he's right. You know, or to prove you're wrong, you know. I tried to prove I wasn't a drug addict, and it almost killed me. You know, I think now I knew I was a drug addict. I tried to prove that was the only way it was ever going to be for me. See, I knew I was a drug addict. I knew I was powerless. But see, that was kind of my identity, to be a drug addict. You know. You know, people say, hey, that guy ODs all the time. Yeah. Hey, that's all I had, you know. That's all I had. You know, I played roles for so many people that, you know, I desperately wanted you to like me, you know. So I would figure out how you wanted me to be, and that's the way I'd try to be, you know. The only thing I didn't like was running around speed freaks, because I hated speed, man. You know, and you got to do speed with them, and then they talk about shit that don't make no difference for days. And you're going, yeah, yeah. And then I'd sneak off somewhere and do some two-and-alls, man, and try to go to sleep, you know. So I wasn't very successful at being a speed freak. But I would do it, you know. It wasn't my druthers, but, you know, if that's who I was with, that's what I did, you know. Are there any heroin addicts in the room? Recovering heroin addicts? Raise your hands. God, I wanted to be a heroin addict. Can't do that in Joplin. Unless being a heroin addict is shooting all the heroin you can get your hands on, then I'm a heroin addict. I just never could get enough to get a good habit going. I used to think, God, if I only lived in Kansas City, man, I could be a heroin addict. You know? Because I thought that was, you know, give me some more class to be a heroin addict, you know. But I had to do whatever was there, you know. And I did, you know. I did a lot of trash, you know. If you said it'd work, I'd try it. You know, a guy gave me some mescaline, he cut it with Jell-O, and powdered Jell-O, and I kept thinking, I wonder what would happen. He said, don't shoot it, you gotta eat it. And I said, why? Is it made out of concrete? Will it break down? If it break down, I'm gonna shoot it. But I kept thinking, if you add the water to the, and then, and you walk in a cold room while that's going through. And if it happens to be around your heart somewhere and then it gels, you're screwed. But, so I snorted it. Isn't it great to be sober? I hate getting emotional. It's not very macho, you know. I have this image to maintain. Oh, God. You know, I'm still sick. You know. You people are the reason I'm alive, you know. I look around and my sponsor stood up when they said Naranons, man. I thought, God. The guy's really going to get well, man. Yeah. You know, that's scary when your sponsor starts going to Naranon, too. My solution to that was I just quit talking to him. I'll go to different meetings. I'll fool him. Yeah. And I love him, you know. He's one of the people that saved my life, you know. And I'm grateful that I know that. You know, I'm grateful that I know that this program saved my life, and this isn't a dress rehearsal, you know. This isn't Disneyland, you know. It's not the sandbox. This is reality, man, you know. This is a life and death struggle, you know. And if I go back out there, I don't know, you know. And I'm comfortable here. You know, and I was real uncomfortable out there. You know, that's a bad deal out there. I know that, and I'm glad I know it, you know. I'm glad I lived long enough in this program to start liking being here, you know. Almost 4 years ago, I went to High on Life Picnic the day after I got out of treatment. And all them people were just grinning. And they had a hug meeting, and then they hugged me first. I went up there and just said something. I just don't know what I said, you know. And went back in the corner and just felt real weird, you know. But my sponsor kept taking me to things like that. I said, I'm not comfortable. So what? Oh. See, addicts don't die from being uncomfortable. They die from using drugs. They don't die from emotional pain. They die from using drugs. And I'm glad I know that. And I learned that from you. You know, I didn't know that when I got here. I didn't know shit when I got here. You know, I'm standing in a treatment center, been out of detox for 8 days and in worse shape than when I got there. Because I took a few pills along, because I know they don't know nothing about detox and then detox. Because I've been there before. You know. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day. And I thought, what the hell are you doing here? You know. I was standing there and I looked like I had a beard, but I didn't. I just hadn't bothered to shave yet for a while. And I had my earring in my ear. I don't remember which side. I don't think it made any difference then. But now you got to be real careful about that stuff. So I don't know, you know. And I think I got a chance to see me for the first time, you know. Had a court case hanging, you know, impending doom. You know, been in the penitentiary more than once. Didn't seem to help. Been in the nut house more than once. That didn't seem to help. I went to a Pentecostal church and got saved and baptized I don't know how many times. That guy used to say, there's somebody out there that needs praying for. Come on up here, Danny. And I'd go. And I love these people. I love these people, okay? I'm not making fun of them. They were trying to give me something that they had. And they all laid hands on me and they prayed. And I felt guilty. Because I couldn't... I had seen them do it to other people. And man, something happened. They got that, whatever they were trying to give them, and just flipped out and did real good with it, came back... They were wonderful. I took a junkie out there with me. She flipped out, ripped the sleeves off her shirts, had tracks all the way up both arms, freaked everybody in the church out. But I couldn't get it, you know. And I felt guilty because I couldn't get it. So I quit going to church. Besides, I was trying to cop before church, and it really got to be a hassle. And my priorities were, I thought, well, I'll quit going to church. Never thinking that maybe I ought to quit using, you know. I didn't think of that till I found you. You know, I didn't know there was an option. I didn't know that I had that choice. You know, and I didn't before I found you. You know, it just never came into my head. You know, that I should quit. I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't do this or that. But I never thought about quitting. Oh, I used to think about quitting. Well, I used to set up real loaded and read the Bible and. And I love to read about Paul because he's always in prison. He was real spiritual. You know, and I can imagine me sitting there in prison writing that stuff. And I throw my dope away. And the next morning, it's panic. It's panic the next morning. See, it's all that shit I said the night before. Forget it. You know, I'd played Let's Make a Deal with God, and the next morning, forget it. And I got to go see the man. See, that option wasn't open to me yet, you know, till I found you. And this program gave me that choice, you know. And I'm grateful for that. I went into the Army for a while. And I'm really trying to stay away from telling a drunk, a dope, a drunkalog, whatever you want to call it, because that's not what's important to me today. You know, I did enough drugs to, as a friend of mine on a tape says, to, what is it? I did enough drugs to qualify for the help that I'm getting here. You know, what it was like, it was a bitch. It really was. It was a lot harder to stay loaded every day than it is to stay straight. I mean, really was. It was really hard, you know. It got to where I just have to, you know, I'd have to go in, I'd just go in a drugstore and just go behind the counter and just take it. I just take it. And I just say, well, I'm just going to go in and take it, you know. And I just go get it. And the guy just be screaming and hollering and shit. And I go to any lengths, you know. And then I go to jail later on, you know. And it would kind of be a relief because, you know, I didn't have to do that anymore. I didn't have to chase drugs, you know. And I didn't have to hurt people. And I didn't have to hurt myself, you know. I didn't have to carry guns, and I didn't have to do all that insanity that I did when I was using. And I don't know if it was the drugs that was doing it or anything. I just know that before I came to this program, I was totally and absolutely insane. You know, and I was insane before I ever took drugs. And the drugs just kept me alive long enough to get here. And I just did exactly what I wanted to do and suffered the consequences and never learned from them and went out and did it again. And, you know, and it was like I felt like I was locked into that. What was going to happen for me later on is I was going to OD, you know, or somebody was going to blow my head off, you know, or I was going to die in the penitentiary. And that was it. That was the only options that I could see, you know, because I was a drug addict. And that's what happened to all the drug addicts I knew, you know. And somewhere along the line, that became okay, you know. And I lost hope, you know, and I started to really die. And then my higher power, I guess, has been in my, you know, working in my life all my life, you know. I've OD'd a few times. I woke up with those little things sticking on you where they got your heart started again, and woke up with my wrist shaved and other places shaved where they tried to find a vein, and, you know, because I don't have any veins anymore, you know. If I was ever to have to get a transfusion, they'd have to do a cutaway, you know. And, you know, I might just get hit by a car and die before they could find a vein, you know. I mean, that's how bad my veins are, you know. And that's okay, you know. The last time I went to prison, I hope it was the last time I went to prison. I went to jail on the 5th or the 8th of May. Bob went to treatment on the 18th. Little did I know that he was on his way to bringing back N.A. to Joplin. See? I guess my higher power knew more about when I was going to be ready than I did. You know? And it satisfies me to believe that the N.A. was brought to Joplin so I could learn to live. You know? That's what I believe. You know? I got out of prison and I'd been in AA in prison I'd been to treatment quite a few times before I went to prison. I was introduced to AA while I was in Nevada State Hospital hiding out from a couple warrants, and we were all up there hiding out smoking pot and acting crazy, and somebody said there's some donuts downstairs at the AA meeting. If you've ever been in a mental institution, you know that they don't feed you very well, and you get hungry anyway. And I had a box of cereal stashed, and I already ate that, and I'm wanting a donut. And I have an obsession. That's a thought that overpowers all other thoughts. And we dashed down to the AA meeting, not knowing that it wasn't over yet, and not knowing that you don't get donuts till it's over. And if your obsessions are anything like mine, it's not like, well, okay, the hell with it. You know, I waited. And I listened, and Blackie was there. And he talked about AA. A long time ago, I was told I was a borderline alcoholic. And I thought that somebody someday would tell me when I crossed the border. You know, they never did. So I figured I was okay. Because when I found drugs, I didn't drink anyway, unless I didn't have any drugs. And I made sure I didn't wasn't out without drugs very long, so my drinking, you know, was a real short time. So I heard them talking about AA, and I thought, God, that's wonderful. If I ever become an alcoholic, that's for me. And another guy was there, and he was talking about heroin. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. And I listened, and he didn't talk very long. And after it was over, I went and shook their hands and went and ate some donuts and left. And later on, I left the mental institution. It was an ADA unit. And went over to this guy's house and was laying around getting high. And this car pulled up. And there's some people in the front. And this guy in the back who was talking about heroin was sitting in the back seat. And he had a jug of wine in one hand. He had a jug of wine in the other hand. And what he wanted from me, he wanted to find out. He said, I'm going to go up to Nevada. What's the best thing I can tell them so they'll give me some good dope? And I thought, AA don't work. You know, didn't work for him. You know, he's drunk. You know, and I wasn't an alcoholic anyway. You know, but you know, later on when I went to jail, I remembered AA, and I remember the guy named Blackie, and I thought, maybe if I get a hold of him, he'll help me get out of jail. You know, I'll tell him I'm an alcoholic. You know, so. I had my folks get a hold of him, and he sent me a big book, and that's all. He didn't put no money in it or anything. Just a book. Uh-huh. And I accidentally read some of it. Boy, don't read that shit. Don't read none of this stuff if you don't want to be one, because if you're here, you probably are. Nobody gets here by accident, I don't think. I saw two or three people walk by out there, and they didn't come in. You know, they didn't say, oh, N.A., I think I'll go in. They went on, you know. Anyway, I read in there, and I read the description of the alcoholic, and I am proud to admit that I am an alcoholic too, you know. But alcohol's a drug, and you know, if it'll get me off, I would do it when I'm out there. We went to the cafe a while ago, and we were all, you know, like 30 of us, and we were all getting ready to leave and hugging and stuff. And on the way out, this lady said, "Oh, that must be a church group." Wow. You know, Kim, I think, said, oh my God. I've been accused of being a lot of things, but never been accused of being a church group. But that's good. That's better than what they used to say. They wouldn't even let us in there, at, you know, this place. Anyway, I got out of prison the last time I got out, and I decided to get drunk one more time. Now, I wasn't an alcoholic, and I don't know why I even thought about getting drunk. I like to think it's because it'd be a little harder to cop, and you know, just real easy to go down to the bar. I don't know. That's what my mind said. But I drank the same way 2.5 years after being locked up as I did the last time I drank. I blacked out immediately. And evidently I was just walking down the sidewalk in a blackout. And the only reason I know this is I read the police report, and who knows? I'm sure they didn't lie about it. They said that no, I did this. God, I hate to admit it. It was about 9:30 at night, and probably, I don't know, the sun was maybe hurting my eyes or something, and I leaped through a window of this optical company to get some sunglasses. And being the type of guy I am, I didn't bother to leave, I just stayed there. And I got 4 pairs. And both places, the place on each side of the place was open, so naturally they knew right away something had happened. And the cops came and took me to jail. And I'd been out of prison for 10 hours. And God's looking out for me, you know. Because I'm still out of prison, you know. I was on parole. But hell, I've been on parole all my life. You know, so it's, you know, being on parole is really no big deal. You know, it's kind of, it will be kind of scary to get off Pearl if I ever do. It'll be like, oh, shit. At least now I know once a month somebody wonders where I'm at. You know? Anyway, I went to treatment out of jail and didn't stay straight, didn't stay sober. Kept blacking out, kept going back to jail for my own protection this time. They'd just find me walking down the street or sitting on a curb, and they'd just hold me 12 hours so I wouldn't hurt myself. I wouldn't, you know, stumble out in front of a car, I guess, or something. And then this happened, and then I went to treatment in Kansas City. And standing in that bathroom, I said, you know, I didn't know why I was there. You know, the thought came to me that maybe I was there to try to get some help. And I'd heard a tape of a guy, and he said on the tape, you don't have to live this way anymore if you don't want to. And it was like a light came on in my head. I didn't know that I had a choice, that I didn't have to live that way anymore. You know, and I came to believe, I think, that maybe this might work, maybe. I don't know, maybe. The little doubt that, you know, maybe it would work. And I said a prayer, you know, I said, God, as long as I have this obsession, I can't think about anything else. Because I could talk to you and concentrate on what you were saying for about a minute, maybe. And then my brain went somewhere else, and it went to getting off or to you know, out ahead of me or behind me or somewhere else. It didn't want to stay where it was. And I went on about my business. The next day I woke up and it was gone. It was like my head was empty. The obsession had completely and totally left. And it hadn't been back. I don't know where it went. You know, I don't have it. And if you've had this experience, and I'm sure you have, it's like, what do I think about? You know, it's like there was a vacuum, you know, nothing up there. And that's pretty close to being true now. You know, it was empty. There wasn't anything to think. You know, I didn't know how to think without the obsession. And I went and talked to a counselor, and he said, well, your prayer's been answered, you know, like it wasn't a big deal. It was a real big deal for me, you know. And I started paying attention. And I did not expect to stay sober. I did not expect to stay straight. I didn't believe this program would work. I don't care what you told me, I didn't believe it. I thought it was a bunch of crap, and but I decided to give it a try. I decided to maybe try to do some of this stuff because I really didn't have anything else to do anyway. I was waiting to go to court, to go back to prison. Didn't have a job, didn't have anything. So I thought, what the hell? You know? And I started going to meetings. You know? I started working with Rick over here. You know, old sick Rick. You know? And it was just what I needed. You know. We didn't work much. Well, we couldn't start work until we went to Little's Cafe for coffee with the rest of the people in the program. And then by then it was almost time for a noon meeting, so we'd have to go to a noon meeting. And a lot of times, in the summertime, a lot of times we'd run into people and they'd say, hey, let's go swimming. So we'd say, well, we'll do that tomorrow. You know, and that's what we did, and that's exactly what I needed. Rick helped me a lot in my recovery. He answered a lot of questions that I needed to have answered, you know. Like, what do you do? You know? Okay, now I'm straight. What do you do? What do people do? You know, well, you just live your life. Really? Is it okay to have fun? You know? Is there life after sobriety? Or, you know, just all become nuns and priests and stuff and, you know, and sit around and talk about celibacy or what? You know, is there sex? Can you have sex? Hell, I didn't know if I could have sex or not. I'd been loaded all my life. You know, I used to have sex with myself in prison a lot, but God, that's really humiliating too. It's better than some of the other stuff that's going on, believe me. Some of them guys get in prison and make it a way of life, and not me, brother. I want out. I mean, I'm working toward the door. I'm not, you know, I'm not setting up housekeeping. I'm not, you know, I don't want to do none of that. I just want to go home. You know. You know, I got things to do and people to see, and I ain't got time to be standing here and getting stabbed or hitting the head with a steel pipe. I don't want to gamble. I don't want to do none of that crap. I want to go home. And I did, and I was real good at being good, you know, because I had some motivation. I wanted out, you know. I got high a few times in the prison, and I got arrested every time I did it. And they have a court inside of prison. They put you in jail after you're in jail. My first experience with that, they put me in a cell with a guy, a 17-year-old kid that killed his mom and dad, and he kept wanting to tell me about it. I was in there 2 days with him, and he said, you know, I've been here 2 days, but you never thought about killing you. I said, really? Okay. You can stay awake 3 days without speed. I did. See, because I don't want to know nothing about that stuff. No. I don't know about killing. Don't tell me about killing. I don't want to know about killing. You know? I want to know about getting high. That's okay. I just don't know anything about killing. You know. Anyway, I got out and I started going to meetings and I started working with Rick, and then I got a job by myself, and I don't know. I picked up a 90-day chip. When I used to come around the program loaded, you know, but I just kind of sat there and try to figure it out, you know. And sometimes if it was a good meeting, I would get really inspired, and they'd have the chips, and I'd go get a chip. I said, maybe 1 week I'd get a 6-month chip. Next week I'd get a 3-month chip. And they always gave them to me. They never said, oh, hey, wait a minute, asshole. Vern told me I kept him straight 9 months just on gratitude. He said, I used to look at you and say, oh, thank God I'm not like that guy. Nobody in NA ever said, don't come back, asshole. They said, keep coming back. And they hugged me. And I love hugs, man. I was so unacceptable to me that when somebody hugged me, it just freaked me out. See, I didn't know what to do with someone who loved me. I knew what to do with you if you didn't like me. But I just didn't like you. But if you loved me, I didn't know what to do. Because I didn't know how to love you. You know? And and the boys would hug me. When you've been in prison, it's not cool for boys to hug you. God, first time a guy hugged me, I looked around and see who was watching. Oh, shit. Everybody was watching. See, but that's my old ideas. See? That's all that crap I'm trying to leave behind me. You know? I don't need it. You know, I don't need to judge anything that's happening with me. You know, and I try real hard not to. You know? I try real hard not to judge you. You know? See, God's the one that does the judging. You know? And that's a big load off my shoulders, and I have to do that. That's a full-time job. You know, taking people's inventory. God, this wears you out, you know? Because there's so many of you. And I learned that if I take your inventory, it's probably me that I'm seeing anyway, so I think you're all beautiful, and I love you. And I don't know what happened. I think I've turned into a square. You know, I try real hard to be an example of what this program can do for you. You know, I really cleaned up my language. I wish Mary was here tonight, Blackie. Let her listen to this tape, will you? I really cleaned up my language, you know. I worked for Blackie, and his wife used to say, God, you got such a garbage mouth, you know. And he mentioned it to me a couple of times, too. You know? And that's what I needed. You know, in a loving way. I needed that because I want to be a good example of what NA can do for you. I don't want to be the jerk I was before. And I don't want to come in here and act like the jerk I was before. I don't want to just be straight. If I had to just be straight and feel like I used to feel, I'd just go out and get loaded or kill myself. I want to be like the people who were here when I got here. That's who I want to be like. That's my role models today. The people who are walking the walk. Not just talking the talk, Because this is my life now. It's not anything but everything I do in my life, I do in between this. As long as I can do it that way, I live a real peaceful life. When I start thinking that there's things in life that's more important than NA and you people, then I get in a real bad space. See? Because I'm forgetting, I'm forgetting where I came from, And it's important for me to get up here and remember where I came from and what kind of condition I was in when I got here, And I've worked the steps to the best of my ability, and my ability changes, and I need to do another fourth and fifth step, I need to do that, And the reason I need to do that is my sponsor said, that she said, I used to think Bob was God. Didn't we, Danny? I used to tell Bob, God, if I had a wife like that, I'd get high too. And she said, if you could run around with him, you wouldn't get high. Nobody ever blamed Bob for getting high. God, addicts are so slick, man. I almost slicked myself into the grave. I did. I almost tricked myself into the grave. And when I come in here, I used to sit around and talk about working the steps, but I wasn't working them. I just talk about working them. And I found out that don't work, just talking about it. And even thinking about it don't work. I used to think about, how you doing on it? Well, I'm in the thought process. Good. Boy, that's scary. The only way for me to work the steps is to work them, because that's the only way I'm going to change. And if I don't change, I'm going to go back out there. If I go back out there, I probably wouldn't die. I'd probably end up with a life sentence and maybe be real crippled, or something, When the last time I was in prison, I walked down and looked at the gas chamber, and it's real nice. It's got the little stuff over, a little trellis where they put little flowers when they're going to gas you, and it's got the little walkway with the big cross on it in the brick, and they keep it freshly painted because they don't use it very often. They hadn't used it in a long time. And they've got a death house crew that go in there and clean it up all the time. And nobody's ever in there, but that's just what they do. And I looked in the window of it, and it looked real peaceful. The sun was shining in there, and it was like you just sit down, and they just drop the pellets in, and then you just go to sleep. And at that point in my life, it looked real comfortable. It looked real good. And I told the guy with me, I said, hey, that looks like a bad deal. It really didn't look like a bad deal. Because I was living behind a 22-foot wall with a bunch of people who were just like me. It's real nerve-wracking to be walking through this chow line and somebody gets stabbed and you don't know what to do. Oh, shit. What do you do? Could I have some more bacon? And you don't want to look, and you don't want to see nothing, and you don't want to go nowhere, and you just want to die right there. And that's a bad way to live, And I thought, just go in there and sit down, and it'd be over. Here a while back, they had a picture of the gas chamber in the paper. They were cleaning it up. There's a guy up there, they're trying to get around the gas, and if they can, And they showed it in the paper. And in the paper, it looked like a bad deal, Today in sobriety, that looks like a bad deal. It don't look fun. It don't look comfortable. It don't look peaceful. It looks like a bad deal. And that's what this program's done for me, It's turned my mind around. You know, I don't want to die anymore. You know, and I care if I live. You know, I didn't care before. You know, whether I lived or died. You know, I used to try to just stay asleep all the time, just do downers and wake up and do downers. You know, and that was it. You know, and the only time I left the house was to get more. You know, and I didn't want anybody around me. You know, the TV played probably for a year without ever being turned off. You know, and that was all I thought there was. You know, boy, I'm glad I lived long enough to find this program. You know, because when I saw you, I saw the miracle. You know, and you just gave it to me. You know, and that's a miracle. Is there anybody in the room that doesn't know where they're at tonight? If you don't know where you're at, raise your hand. Anybody in the room that doesn't know who they are? Is there anybody in the room that doesn't want to be here? Is that a miracle? Man, I woke up some places I didn't want to be with some people I didn't like and had no idea how I got there. You know, but that's where my addiction took me. And today I've got a choice where I go and who I'm with and what I do. You know, I don't have to be anybody but who I am. You know, and what I want to be is a good member of this program. I want to be. The other day, when I was driving a delivery truck, I used to pull in this liquor store and buy cigarettes or drive in because it was quicker. One day it snatched, snatched. I had an easy does bumper sticker on the back of the truck, and I thought, what if somebody in the program saw me at a liquor store? They don't know what I'm buying, you know. See, so I don't do that anymore. You know, I don't do that anymore. I don't do anything that's counterproductive to what this program teaches me. You know, and if I do, I hear about it, and I don't do it again. Because I want to be a good example of what this program can do, you know. Because the new people are the most important people. And if when I got here, if you hadn't showed me something that I wanted, I would have went out there and died. But you showed me something that was attractive to me. You gave me something to shoot at. You gave me hope, you know. And I'd lost hope. And that was my first gift. And with that, I've gotten more gifts than I can imagine. You know, they just keep coming. You know, people say, how are you doing? I say, probably better than I deserve. You know, I'm happy, joyous, and free. And I'm straight. And I've been straight for a little while. You know, one day at a time. You know? And I know my higher power loves me. You know. And I know you love me, because I love you, you know. And that's the miracle. Glad to be here. Thank you.